podcast featuring interviews and commentary from Animal Rights Zone, the online social network for humans who seek justice for other animals. You can find us on the web at www.arzone.net. I'm your host, Carolyn Bailey. In today's episode, I discuss with fellow AR Zone admins Tim Geyer and Ronnie Lee the answer that longtime activist Kevin White has given to the now famous Ronnie question. To begin, Ronnie will explain what the Ronnie question is, and then we'll hear Kevin's response. Now, let's go with Ronnie to the Wagon and Horses pub and listen to what Kevin has to say.
Hi, this is Ronnie Lee, reporting for one of a new series of podcasts for AR Zone entitled The Ronnie Question. Now, the Ronnie Question is something I've been asking on AR Zone in the podcast there for quite some while, and it's simply finding out from people how it was they became vegan and began to campaign for animal protection. Now, I think this is important because if we can find out how people became vegan in the first place, we can develop better strategies for public education in terms of making more people vegan and creating a better world for both animals and people alike. Right, now the first person I'm going to talk to tonight is Kevin White. Now Kevin's really very famous in the vegan movement in the UK because he's the guy behind the very successful West Midlands Vegan Festival. So I'm going to now ask Kevin how it was he became vegan and what set him on the trail to do all these good things that he's now doing for the animals. All right, Kevin, if you can tell us.
Hi, Ronnie. Yeah, about 13 years ago now, I became aware that live exports were leaving from my hometown of Redditch, and I swiftly got involved with campaigning against that, and soon after various other animal rights issues, went veggie after about a year, just about a year, and then vegan about a year later. Campaigned for animal rights ever since. Pretty much took over my life. And so, yeah, I've been campaigning on all issues for many, many years. But about 6-7 years ago now, I became more and more interested in vegan campaigning. And I set up a Redditch Veggies and Vegans group, which organised food fairs and so on. And soon after that, I also set up Midlands Vegan Campaigns, which organised food fairs across the West Midlands region, and also started to organise the West Midlands Vegan Festival, which is an annual festival of vegan lifestyle, celebrating veganism.
Well, that's very interesting, because it seems that it was through a kind of what might be called a sort of single-issue campaign that was to do with more to do with animal welfare than veganism that actually set you on the road to becoming a vegan. Would you say that that's right?
Initially, I mean, live exports was a big movement. Back in the late '90s, you know, you've got Shoreham going on, Brightlingsea, Dover, Coventry, campaigns in all those cities against the live export trade. And Redditch was a major lairage because Stephen Wood, he was one of the big players in the live export situation at the time. So there was a major campaign running against him, and big national demos used to take place there at the time. So it was inevitable that I got involved. But that was seen as a live. It was seen as an animal rights issue, although it may be by some now to be seen as an animal welfare issue, but at the time it was certainly animal rights campaigners that were involved in that, and that were organising those protests. And I see what you mean about animal welfare.
So was it through rubbing shoulders with people that were vegan that you became vegan yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, very soon after getting involved with the live export campaigns, I was joining the chicken farm demos. I was very soon at Hillgrove Cat Farm campaigning against vivisection to cats, and Huntingdon Life Sciences and every other animal rights issue that there is. So yeah, I was almost instantly rubbing shoulders with lots of vegans, and I think it was inevitable from the start that I would be turning vegan myself at some point, which I did about 18 months, 2 years after getting involved. Some may say that's a long time to leave it, but and to me now it seems crazy that I left it 18 months to 2 years before going vegan, but that was the situation at the time. That's what happened, and fortunately nobody put too much pressure on me and made me walk down the road and get out of campaigning, because I think potentially it could have had that effect. I've seen that happen these days since, where a little bit too much pressure is put on people to change their diet, and it ends up forcing them out of the campaigning and scaring them away, which I think is a shame.
I think that was a really interesting discussion with Kevin Ronnie. Kevin obviously cares very much about the rights of other animals, and it's wonderful to hear him speak, not only about when and how he became vegan, but why he works so hard to do so much to bring the vegan message to as many people as he can. He really is an inspiration. One thing I noticed with Kevin is that he seems to interchange the terms animal rights and animal welfare, referring to campaigns particularly like the Ban Live Export campaign as a rights-based campaign. I wonder, do we think that that's an important issue? Do we think we should be clearer in how we define such things, and what would be the reasons we should be? Do you think it matters to most people who are new or aspiring vegans about using these particular terms?
And I tend to think that, what actually happened with the live export campaign was that it was basically people in the areas from where the exports were taking place that started these campaigns, like Downing. I think Kevin mentioned Shoreham, perhaps, and Brightlingsea. And then there was also Coventry, because there were calves being flown out from Coventry Airport. And it was, first of all, people in those areas that started those campaigns. And a lot of those people weren't even vegetarian, let alone vegan. They were just concerned about the suffering that those animals would undergo, both in transport and also when they got to their destination, through what were, I think, perceived as more cruel methods of slaughter. So, and then what happened was a lot of people from other areas became involved and would travel to take part in these demonstrations. And quite a number of vegans became involved, and people that campaigned on other issues that would be classed as animal rights issues, I suppose, where they were talking about total abolition of a particular practice done against animals, rather than what might be seen as more welfare issue. Mm-hmm. With the live exports, you see. And because of that, although whether I'd get myself involved in a campaign regarding live exports, I don't think I would, because I prefer to just campaign for people to be vegan. But there was some good that came out of vegans being involved in that campaign, because a lot of the people that weren't vegan, that were campaigning against live exports, became vegan through rubbing shoulders with the people that were already vegan that had become involved. So there was that good aspect that came out of it. And I think it's a question. You see, I think anything that reduces the suffering of animals can be said to be positive. So, you know, stopping animals being sent on long, grueling journeys where they quite probably suffer more than a shorter journey perhaps to a slaughterhouse in this country. That could be viewed as a positive thing in that you're reducing suffering. And my issue with it isn't that that's reducing suffering, but is the amount of reduction that's caused worth the effort that's put into it? And would it be better to put that effort into just educating people to be vegan, which I think is kind of why I would go down the path of vegan education rather than campaigning against live exports personally.
Kevin mentioned, I think himself, that he became vegan by rubbing shoulders with people that were involved in those sort of issues as well, didn't he?
Yes, he did, yeah.
I think that's something to remember. I think that's really important. I know I can only speak about the Ban Live Export campaigns that have happened here in Australia. I'm not terribly familiar with the campaigns that happened over there, but I guess if somebody was to refer to a Ban Live Export campaign from Australia, it certainly would not be classed as a rights-based campaign, because the campaigns that have been run here in recent years certainly don't consider the rights of the individuals that they claim to be advocating for. So I'm just not sure how other people deemed the importance of the terminology to be. I know that it's very, very important to some people, but I know that particularly new and aspiring vegans are not likely to even know what the difference is, let alone find that there's importance there. I don't know how other people feel about that. I think the language is quite important.
So just so that I understand what you're asking, should the campaign itself be referred to as something that has to do with animal rights when it doesn't actually have something to do with creating or protecting or ensuring the rights of other animals, because it's only about the treatment or where they're slaughtered or how they're slaughtered and so forth, which really has nothing to do with whether or not they have a right to not be slaughtered in the first place. So your question is, I think, is it a problem if people in the general public get a confused message as to whether or not that has something to do with rights? Am I getting you right?
Kind of. And also I'm also asking if somebody who has been such a high profile and experienced and obviously important campaigner as Kevin White has been in the UK, if somebody like Kevin can quite easily interchange the two terms, I'm just not sure whether that indicates that a lot of people don't find that to be an issue.
Right. So you're saying so Kevin doesn't put a whole lot of emphasis on whether he should be talking about rights or welfare in the context of that thing. So mm-hmm. if somebody like Kevin, who's been doing this for a long time and obviously knows what he's working for, isn't particularly concerned about terminology, maybe the focus on particular words or particular framing of the issues isn't as important as some people in the movement think it is. Is that's sort of what you're asking?
That's the question I'm asking. I'm just asking for yours and Ronnie's opinion on that. Like I said, I think that there should be an importance placed on the terminology. I think I can see problems with there being kind of mixed signals and mixing up and interchanging words like rights and welfare. I think that the two, animal rights and animal welfare, are two completely different things. But I'm open to being told that other people disagree with me.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how Ronnie feels about it, but I'll say that I think it does matter, but I think that context is important. So while I think that people ought to understand the difference between what a campaign that's designed to end all use of other animals, you know, which is what I guess people would think, you know, as more of a rights-based campaign to say they ought not to be used for anything at all, and that's what we're after, you know, then I think that's important. But I also think that if if the average person out in the world has never really thought one way or another about whether it's right or wrong to use other animals in the way that we use them, and I think that most people probably haven't really thought about it, then I'm not so sure that if you're getting a foot in the door, so to speak, and you're getting some people to be involved in an issue who otherwise wouldn't be involved at all, then I think that as they become exposed to the ideas, you'll have a chance to make those differences known to them. What do you think, Ronnie?
Well, first of all, I think that if welfare was used according to what I consider the real meaning of welfare, I mean, welfare means fare well, doesn't it? And I think, you know, how can an animal be faring well when that animal's being slaughtered? You see, so really, if the phrase was used according to what I consider it to be its true meaning, there wouldn't be a problem with it, because it would mean that it would mean having a totally abolitionist position. It's not in the interests of an animal to be killed. It's not animal welfare really. To slaughter an animal for food or for whatever reason. So, but it's how the word has become used, I think, to mean that it's okay to exploit animals as long as we do that within certain limits. That's how it's come to be used.
I agree with that.
And I suppose we have to go with that. I think another problem is the media. You see, the media will refer to anything to do with improving conditions for animals is almost always referred to in the media as animal rights. Certainly, you know, certainly in the UK, and that's what ordinary people will be reading. A distinction won't be made in the media. The demonstrations against live exports were almost always referred to in the media as animal rights demonstrations. So that's another problem you've got. It's what the media says. The media doesn't make that distinction. And also, you know, people involved in the animal protection movement often don't make that distinction either. Because those people aren't philosophers. They're just people that care about animals and campaign for animals. So they probably don't feel it's important to make the distinction between two things. I think events like protests against live exports, I think those events do give vegans an opportunity to educate the people that are on those demonstrations. Because obviously, the people that take part in those events care about animals. They feel compassion towards animals. They don't want animals to suffer. So they're going to be receptive to the vegan message. So it's worthwhile getting involved or actually going along to those events, if only to give vegan leaflets to the people that are participating, to try to, you know, move them along the road towards veganism. So I think it's worth vegans attending those events, if only for that reason, because it's there are people there ripe to be converted to veganism. And I don't tend to, as you know very well already, I don't really tend to think in terms of rights. I think in terms of liberation. The way I kind of look at it, I think is that you've got one species, the humans, that oppresses all the others, and the other animals on Earth need to be liberated from the oppression that's been caused to them by humans. That's how I look at it. To me, animal rights is more a philosophical concept. Animal liberation is a practical concept on the face of the Earth, in physical reality. So, and obviously an animal that's still being taken to the slaughterhouse, it isn't an animal that's liberated. you know, animal liberation means that, you know, animals aren't persecuted, exploited, and killed by human beings. And that's kind of how I look at it, rather than going into this whole thing of rights, which I consider to be more, you know, I'm not opposed to the concept of animal rights, but I feel it's a philosophical concept rather than a practical one, and which is why I prefer to talk about animal liberation, which is kind of how I refer to myself as a liberationist. But in terms of the public, because liberation, I think, might frighten people, they think of animal liberation maybe as people breaking into places and balaclavas and all that, then I prefer to talk about animal protection, because you know, I do want animals to be protected, and that's a more gentle term that people can more easily take on board and accept. So to me, it's all about what happens practically in flesh and blood on the face of the earth, rather than what I consider to be a philosophical concept, which is why I don't tend to really talk in terms of rights.
I think I agree with most of that, Ronnie. I think the only thing that that I'd add to that is that I think that it's important to understand the philosophy of animal rights in order to understand the best way to go about the liberation of other animals. So I do think that the philosophy of animal rights is something that's very important to understand, but I also understand you saying that talking about animal liberation is a much more practical way to approach things.
I think it's interesting that we have these various people that Ronnie's talked to that have talked about why they become vegan, how they become vegan, what the process was like for them. And we were talking before about, in an earlier podcast, we were talking about alliance politics. And one of the questions was, is in that podcast, was should we welcome people who aren't vegan or aren't animal rights activists into our campaign for various things that we would campaign for? And what it sounds like, some of, at least Kevin White is saying that he wasn't vegetarian when he became involved in the live exports thing. And it was because he became involved in that he became vegetarian, and then a year and a half later or so, if I remember what he says correctly, that then he became vegan afterwards. And so talking about alliance politics, it seems like it makes sense that you would want people who aren't necessarily in tune with veganism or animal rights to be involved in these campaigns, because they do understand that you know, there are things that we do to other animals that are just wrong. And once they start to see that some of the things that we do to other animals are just wrong, then they can start to see that the whole system is wrong. But, you know, you do have to start somewhere, which is the other thing that I was going to say is that, I mean, I appreciate very much that people ought to think about what animal rights means and what the philosophy of it means, and I sort of like to talk about philosophy myself, but it's and I know that someone's going to accuse me of being an elitist or being arrogant when I say this, but there are plenty of people in the animal rights movement who talk about animal rights and they have no idea what they're talking about. I mean, rights isn't a concept that just got invented because people were upset at the way that other animals were being treated. There's actually, you know, there's a long and complex history about what rights are and how they come about and who has them and why and what they mean and so on and so forth. And so they're you know, if we're going to wait to get everybody to understand what animal rights are in order to get this movement going, then I'm afraid we're going to have an awful long wait, because we really don't have agreement in, you know, in terms of philosophy. We don't even have agreement on what human rights are. So I wish that more people would take the time to read about all this stuff, but even doing that doesn't necessarily get you the clarity that we might like to think.
Absolutely. I understand that. I think that if people, if, as you said, there are a lot of people in the animal advocacy community that don't really understand the philosophy of animal rights, but still like to refer to themselves as an animal rights advocate or animal rights activist. I think that, I know we've all heard this before, but I think that if you don't understand the philosophy of animal rights, perhaps calling yourself an animal rights advocate may not be the best title to use. I think that perhaps it's best to maybe call yourself an animal protectionist or something else. I think, again, you know, it comes back to whether you find the language important or not. And I do think that it's important. And I think that it can be confusing to, you know, interchange words and not be clear about who you are and what you stand for.
Well, I think you're right about that. But, you know, I think what Ronnie was saying, and I think I agree with him, is that if the average person on the street isn't going to understand a philosophical argument about rights, and if the average animal advocate isn't really equipped to make a philosophical argument about rights, then why even talk about rights? Why not talk about things that people can understand, like, you know, other animals have experiences just like you and I do, and why in the world would we want to stop them from having them? Why would you, you know, no one, I mean, everybody knows that it's wrong to get your rocks off by hurting a cat or a dog. Everybody knows that. I mean, it seems like, you know, we have these philosophical, and I'm as guilty of it or worse than most people probably, but, you know, we have philosophical discussions about animal rights, and it's a really simple idea, isn't it? Other animals are like us in the ways that matter, and you know, we just ought to leave them alone.
Other people are already part of the way there, you see. But most people do care about cats and dogs. Most people wouldn't want to be cruel to a cat or a dog. I mean, some would, and a lot of people that neglect animals like that. But in general, most people would be against that cruelty. Because they appreciate that those animals have feelings. And so they're already partly along the road. So because of that, you don't really need to talk to those people about rights. You've just got to extend their feelings to include other animals to get them to realise that, you know, pigs and cows and sheep and chickens and fish suffer just as much as those animals that they care about. And those animals that are used for food and other forms of exploitation are just as much individuals as the animals they care about. And you're there, really. You know, there's no need to kind of go into any sort of deep philosophical discussion because you just kind of take people along a road which they've already started off on in a sense. I think one of the problems going back is this idea of people saying that they're animal rights activists when that technically that might not really be the case. I think it's because the phrase animal rights has always been used in a very loose sense to just describe anyone that kind of advocates for animals. It's just been used in that loose sense, so people carry on using it in that loose sense. The main reason I don't use it is because it's got connotations that have been created by the media, you know, that kind of animal rights activists are these people that kind of are dangerous and extremists and all that. And although that's totally untrue, of course, you know, people are going to take that up for reading the paper. So I prefer to use, when I'm talking to the public, I prefer to use animal protection because that's much more gentle. You know, that doesn't conjure up in the minds of people someone that's wearing a balaclava and is going to plant a bomb or whatever the media would like people to think, you see. So a lot of it's done for tactical reasons. You know, I want to be able to talk to people. I want people to listen to me. I don't want people to be immediately put off from listening to me because of how I've described myself.
I think that kind of takes us back to the original question, you know, the emphasis we place on the importance of the language that we use. I think you mentioned that most people would not want to be cruel to a dog or a cat, and I agree with you, Ronnie. I think that the majority of the population would be horrified at any sort of cruelty to dogs and cats. But I think that there's a huge leap from wanting not to be cruel to a cat, but still not having a problem using that cat for your own purposes, and actually recognizing that cat deserves the right to her life, liberty and bodily integrity, and she deserves respect as an individual. I think there's a big difference between the two.
A study has shown that when a person decides that they're going to eat a particular animal, they think about that animal differently than they would otherwise. It's not that we eat the ones that we don't care about. It's that we don't care about the ones that we choose to eat, is what this study shows. So what you're saying, Carolyn, is true, and that's that it's very easy for people to say that they care about other animals, and they do care about other animals, but the truth is that when we decide that we're going to use them in a particular way, we stop thinking about them. In other words, you know, dogs are the sorts of animals that you use as companions, and you have them around, and you treat them well, and they fetch your whatever, and play with you, and so on, and that's how you use them. And so that's fine. The way we use cows is by cutting them up and putting them on our plates. And that's an appropriate use of cows. And so it's not, they don't see that as cruelty to cows because that's what cows are for. And
Absolutely.
That's what cows are for. Cows are to be eaten. Dogs are to be played with. So I do think that even though people do have a sense of a connection with other animals, it obviously doesn't extend far enough because otherwise people would not be eating cows, or they wouldn't be playing with dogs.
Kevin also spoke with Ronnie about the West Midlands Vegan Festival and other organised food fairs.
There's going to be another Midlands Vegan Festival again this year, and I've heard that it's going to be even bigger and better. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, last year was the fourth West Midlands Vegan Festival, and so we've got bigger and better year after year since it started. So last year there were 1,700 people through the door, and the aisles inside the festival, the aisles in between the stalls, were literally crammed throughout the day. And we actually had a lot of feedback that that people didn't like that. You know, they'd like to be able to move about a bit more, you know, and be able to get to the stalls, because a lot of people couldn't get to see what was on the stalls. It was so crammed. So this year, yes, we are expanding the festival. Previous 4 years, the first 2 years we used a small hall. The second 2 years we used a larger hall. This year we're using both halls together, so it's a large hall and a slightly smaller hall. So it will be a much expanded festival, and we're also staying open for an hour longer as well, open till 6 o'clock this year. So it's a full 7 hours that the festival will be open, and we're hoping for well in excess of 2,000 people this year through the doors.
And that's in Wolverhampton in October, end of October, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. That's Saturday the 27th of October at the Wolf Civic in Wolverhampton, and it will be open from 11 a.m. till 6 p.m. There will be in excess of 100 stalls, over 20 talks, 5 cookery demos through the day, live entertainment in a separate room throughout the day, all manner of attractions and entertainment laid on, all manner of stall holders, everything from the most delicious and varied vegan cuisine from all around the country, the best vegan caterers we've got coming, to cosmetics and toiletries, to clothing and footwear, you name it, it will be there.
And there's been a good feedback, hasn't there, in terms of where people have filled in forms, in terms of the number of non-vegans or even non-vegetarians that actually attend that festival.
Absolutely, yes, that's right. Well, like I said before, we have a lot of feedback every year, and last year we had 313 feedback forms filled in, and we know that 50% of those were actually non-vegans, approximately 15% meat eaters and 35% vegetarians, which I think is evidence that there is a huge amount of curiosity in the vegan diet, and I think that is building. It's been building for some years now, and I see it go on building because there are increasing reasons to go vegan. It's the diet for health, it's the diet for environmental reasons, and obviously for animal rights, animal welfare. There's no getting away from it. The future is veganism.
Ronnie, can I ask you a question about vegan food fairs? kind of as a general matter. I was just wondering, are they intended to draw people in with the amazing food that's on offer and then to speak about more ethical issues, or are they mostly a food-based event?
Well, first of all, there's different sorts of vegan fairs. For instance, the big vegan festivals, like the West Midlands Vegan Festival, there's certainly a great deal of delicious food there, you know, both in terms of free samples and also food you can buy. But there's lots of other stuff as well. There's stalls from all sorts of animal protection organisations. There's and other related organisations like green organisations, etc. And also a lot of stalls selling ethical merchandise. You can get cosmetics, you can get footwear, you can get all sorts of clothes there. So that would, those events may attract people for a variety of different reasons. Although the food, you know, will play a big part. You know, there certainly will be some people going there because of the food. And then you get other events that are much more food based, that are actually called food fairs, and the idea there is really to attract people who are, I suppose, have some interest in veganism, that kind of are wondering, well, what's it like? I want to find a bit more about this. I want to see what food these people eat, that kind of thing. And those people would go along to those events, and that they would probably go mainly for the food, to see what vegan food was like, and then they'd be given leaflets and information about the, you know, the ethical arguments. So you do have the two different types of events. I think certainly in the second event, the food fairs, the food is actually a major part of it, because I think there are a lot of people that kind of wonder about veganism. That kind of the first question that enters their head is, yeah, I'd maybe consider being a vegan, but whatever would I eat? You know, what food, how would I survive? What could I eat? You know, how am I going to get the nutrients I need? And what's the food going to be like? Is it going to be horrible? Is it going to be bland? You know, and so by having a food fair, you kind of, you know, you introduce people to how wonderful, you know, vegan cuisine can be, and, you know, and if they're more interested in the kind of more convenience food products, how good those products are these days. And so you kind of, I suppose, break that down, that barrier that people may have in their heads about how difficult it is in terms of the food.
Yeah, I think Kevin said that he did a survey at last year's West Midlands Vegan Festival, and the information that he received back was that about 50% of the people that attended the vegan festival last year were not vegan. So I think, you know, I think that there's good reason to think that drawing people in with food and then presenting them with a whole heap of other ethical issues is it's quite a good idea.
Yeah. I mean, it is a good idea, and it's something that obviously works when you look at the number of people. Last year's West Midlands Vegan Festival, you could hardly move. I mean, which is why they've had to use a whole on the part of the venue as well. They've had to use the whole of the venue instead of part of it now to stay fair, because you'd go to get a cup of tea, and by the time you got back to your stall, the tea would be cold because you're trying to battle your way through these crowds of people, and it was so crowded really that there was a real danger of it being off-putting and people thinking, well, I won't go again because it was just so crowded. So hopefully that problem will be solved this year with it being having so much more space. But that's a sign of the popularity of it, the fact that that it had, you know, extended in that way, and is now, you know, occupying far more space than right at the beginning. And it's definitely a popular event. And so are events like, there was one recently at Bristol where that was a three-day vegan event called VegFest. And that's, I think that attracted maybe about 8,000 people over 3 days, like, you know, hugely popular events. So definitely something that definitely something I think that works in terms of getting more people to become vegan.
Yeah, it's not a bad problem to have, is it, having too many people at a vegan festival?
No, at all, no. That's very true.
Thank you for listening to AR Zone. Please visit us online at www.arzone.net and look for us on iTunes.